Today is Monday, September 21st. This is the news conference on DNA with Milwaukee County Sheriff David A. Clark, Jr.
Get that door, please. Good afternoon, and thank you for being here. When it was learned several weeks ago that a serial killer was able to circumvent the State Department of Corrections DNA collection procedure and go on to kill multiple times and escape detection, we all watched as the State Department of Justice, the Crime Lab, and the Department of Corrections engaged in the old comical routine of who's on first. No one seemed to know the facts, and to me, that is a problem. No one was willing to accept responsibility and give the people of the state of Wisconsin the confidence that someone was in charge, the problem would be rectified, and people would be held accountable. It doesn't matter to the people of the state of Wisconsin whether it's 12,000, 1,200, or 12 DNA samples not taken from criminal offenders. The fact that no one knows means that no one feels responsible. This is not a perfect world, and sometimes bad outcomes will occur. But I remind people in my office that we operate with no margin for error. It's a tough standard, but it's the way that we approach our responsibility. We do know this for certain, and that is that Walter Ellis's DNA was missing. The Department of Corrections, the Crime Lab, and the Department of Justice will need time to sort this mess out, and that is understandable. The system currently in place was designed to meet the needs of a different era, an era gone by. The collection of DNA from criminal suspects from this point forward, however, needs to be fixed, and it needs to be fixed now. The safety of Wisconsin's residents all over the state is at risk, and it is imperative that the Wisconsin State Legislature act with a sense of urgency on what I am proposing. Some people run from responsibility. I embrace it. It's my duty. I'm joined here today by people who want to get this fixed. I've seen how slow the legislative process can be. Sometimes that's good, but sometimes it hurts the people who are counting on us to protect them. We are not reinventing the wheel here. Other than the necessary time needed to get this legislation right, I am imploring the Wisconsin State Legislature to get this bill done. I'm not looking to address past failures. I offer a potential solution that can take care of this issue with the sense of urgency that appears to be lacking 76 miles to the west of Milwaukee. For generations, law enforcement in our state and in our nation has been taking and processing identification samples from those in custody. They're called fingerprints. My agency booked over 44,000 inmates last year and more than 49,000 the year before. That's 93,000 samples over a two-year period. In each case, we process them and send them along to the FBI, that's the fingerprints, seamlessly. If there is a problem with the submission, we find out within hours and capture another sample, seamlessly. It's time for professional law enforcement to catch up with modern science and bring all of the technologies that we have to bear on the issue of safeguarding our citizenry. DNA is the fingerprint of the 21st century. So here's what I'm proposing. If the Attorney General wants the DNA of those arrested for crimes in our communities captured and processed by a group with a proven record of getting it done, the sheriffs can handle it for them. Once the state legislature has a chance to consider this issue, we can capture DNA samples at the time of booking into a county jail for those arrested for crime. I'm trying to close all loopholes. By law, only the sheriffs can run a jail. All persons arrested and charged with a crime, or when a criminal complaint is issued by the district attorney, they must be booked into the county jail in order to get the criminal process started. Collecting DNA as part of being booked into a county jail is the surest way to know that the DNA sample will be collected. It will be the responsibility of sheriffs to send the sample to the crime lab. Our local property taxpayers will need to be made whole by the state for performing a state function, but we can get it done. All 50 states authorize the collection and analysis of DNA samples from convicted offenders and enter resulting DNA profiles into the federal combined DNA index system, which the FBI has established, and it currently holds almost 7 million records. However, only 15 of our brother and sister states have chosen to collect DNA samples from individuals they arrest, including most recently California, which expects to nearly double the growth rate of its database to 400,000 profiles a year. I want the state of Wisconsin to be the 16th such state. In fact, current federal law allows the Attorney General to collect DNA samples from all individuals who are arrested, facing charges, or convicted, and from non-U.S. United States persons who are detained under the authority of the United States. Currently in Wisconsin, we capture that DNA after conviction. This will help to identify illegal aliens involved in criminal activity as well. Why does the federal government allow such a liberal collection of DNA? They recognize that the emergence of DNA identification technology holds vast potential for use in the criminal justice system. In support of this position, the Supreme Court of the United States has proffered that DNA constitutes genetic fingerprints that can be used to identify an individual uniquely, but do not disclose an individual's traits, disorders, or disposition. And that case is United States versus Kincaid. As a federal publication, DNA sample collection and biological evidence preservation in the federal jurisdiction informs us, as with fingerprints, the collection of DNA samples at or near the time of arrest also can serve purposes relating directly to the arrest and ensuing procedures. For example, analysis and database matching of a DNA sample collected from an arrestee may show that the arrestee's DNA matches DNA found in crime scene evidence from a murder, rape, or other serious crime. Such information helps authority to assess whether an individual may be released safely to the public pending trial and to establish appropriate conditions for his or her release or to ensure proper security measures in case he is detained. It may help to detect violations of pretrial release conditions involving criminal conduct whose perpetrator can be identified through DNA matching and to deter such violations. The collection of a DNA sample may also provide an alternative means of directly ascertaining or verifying an arrestee's identity. Where fingerprint records are unavailable, incomplete, or inconclusive, which happens a lot. Hence, conducted incident to an arrest and booking is what I'm adding, DNA sample collection offers a legitimate means to obtain valuable information regarding the arrestee, such as Walter Ellis. I am reaching out to select members of the Milwaukee delegation of the state legislature and asking them to discuss whether we as Wisconsinites are ready to stop relying on a technology that was developed in the 1800s and being captured and begin capturing DNA samples at the time of booking into our county jails. Now I want to call on District Attorney John Chisholm for some comments. John.
Thank you very much, Sheriff Clark. Thank you for taking leadership in this issue. The obligation we have as public officials is when we identify a problem, we correct that problem, and we look to make the system better than it was before. I think this offers us an opportunity to do exactly that, to make this a better system. As Sheriff Clark has indicated, other states have already taken the lead on this, and identifying those persons who are under investigation for felony offenses. The collection of DNA is done at the very start of the proceeding and doesn't wait until the back end of the proceeding. What we've encountered in our experience has been gaps in the back end and not in the front end. So one of our obligations in reviewing this entire process is how can we make it better? What can we do to prevent those gaps from occurring and from leaving people out on the streets that should be brought to justice appropriately? I think this is a reasonable direction to go. We've had conversations, I've had informal conversations with Senator Plaley. He's here today to express his interest in reviewing this important issue, and I'm convinced that we can come up with a bill fairly quickly that will address people's concerns for their privacy and still provide a very valuable tool to law enforcement to prevent any kind of disconnect that's occurred in the past from occurring in the future. So with, again, we're pleased with Sheriff Clark's leadership in this area and very pleased to have Senator Plaley here today to speak to the issue as well. Thank you very much, Senator Plaley.
Thank you. I'm glad I'm not playing these guys in basketball, but I am happy to be on the same team when it comes to this issue. This is, for me, it's a very common sense issue. You capture a photograph, you capture a fingerprint. This is capturing one more piece of identification, and it's as simple as a cotton swab to the inside of the cheek or perhaps a blood draw. The DA and I were talking earlier today about, you know, 20 years ago, this would have been science fiction. Today it's something that's done each and every day. If something like this had been in place originally, perhaps the issues that we're reading about and watching on TV every day wouldn't be occurring. Will this undo that? No, it won't. But if it helps prevent more of those issues from occurring down the road and ultimately keeping the citizens of Wisconsin safer, it's a very simple measure that will go a very long way toward achieving that goal. This ought not be a difficult process in the legislature, but I've been around long enough to know that even the simplest things in the legislature can be a difficult process. I'm going to reach out to members of both parties, members of both chambers. It's my hope to have something drafted quickly, review it with these gentlemen, make sure our I's are dotted, T's are crossed, get it into the legislative hopper relatively quickly. Again, I don't anticipate an enormous pushback, but the legislative process can be tricky at times. But when it comes to the safety of the citizens of Wisconsin, this is a very simple step that will pay a very long-term dividend. Happy to take any questions.
So, guys, how will it get paid for? Obviously, if there's more cases being prosecuted, John, you need more prosecutors. Sheriff, you may need personnel to process these DNA things. The crime lab's got to look through them. Maybe that comes back to Jeff then. Let's say you propose this. How do you come up with the money to do all that?
I think one of the initial issues is that the reason that the sheriff is stepping forward on this is we put the burden on processing individuals at the front end of the system on the sheriff's departments throughout the state already. And there's a number of processes they go through. For example, some might not know that almost everybody that comes in is screened by a nurse, for example, given a quick assessment. We assess them for any number of things. We process their fingerprints, their pictures, all of these different steps. This would just be one additional step that I think could actually be done in a reasonable fashion. The real question that it goes to is there's no doubt that there would be an expansion of samples sent to the crime lab. That's one of the concerns that was expressed back in 2006 and why the legislature funded the crime lab to a greatly expanded rate in the last 2 or 3 years. I think that those capacity issues can be addressed separately. Certainly there'd be some additional costs, but I think in the long run you could do this in a way that would be cost neutral, and more important, it would be incredibly efficient and productive in terms of identifying those individuals who are out there perpetrating crimes and holding them to account without the long delays that we sometimes occasion right now.
So this would happen after a person is arrested, before they're formally charged?
Yes, and what's happened in other states is there's provisions in place. Almost all the states have a felony requirement. It's felony DNA collection. So a person's arrested for a felony offense, the sample is taken. If at some point in time a decision is made that there isn't sufficient evidence to charge the case, there's provisions for expungement in place that requires the destruction of the DNA at that point in time if the person isn't already on file. So there's all sorts of provisions that can be crafted that, again, safeguards the people's civil liberties while at the same time giving law enforcement the appropriate identification tools they need right at the front end.
Do you gentlemen favor something like that would have the sample expunged if the person isn't charged?
Without a doubt.
Oh, absolutely.
No question. Yeah, that's fairly standard. As the sheriff also indicated, as of January this year, the federal government, federal law enforcement, has gone to exactly that standard, that when a person is arrested for a federal offense, their DNA is collected. Whether they're indicted in the end or charged or not, their DNA is collected. And the provisions are in place to remove that information if the decision is made that the state hasn't met the requisite burden or it's not appropriate to charge a case, then that sample is taken out of the population.
Because you need to get, I mean, right now there's a search warrant that has to be granted to get the DNA on a suspect. I mean, is there concern about circumventing that process by picking somebody up on something that might be ticky-tacky that isn't necessarily going to be charged, but then there's a DNA sample that you can run in the meantime or that kind of thing? And would there
Sure, Nick. That's traditionally been the concern, and that's what's been raised at appellate levels throughout the country whenever this program is initiated. And that's why you have to have these protocols in place that show that you have a legitimate basis for seeking this sample and incorporating this into your standard processing of the case. You would not do it, for example, for citation offenses, for a person arrested for a disorderly conduct ticket or something of that nature. It would involve those cases, which in our experience are likely to be reviewed and charged as felony offenses.
How many profiles are added to the database each year, and how many more would be under this system, roughly?
I would say you can estimate, since we went to DNA collection in roughly 1996, we have approximately 120,000 to 130,000 samples in the database right now. Those are for convicted felons, for originally sex offenses, then for all felony offenses. And then obviously we're missing 12,000 of them still. So I would expect there's generally, in my experience, about a 70% no process rate on some cases. So you're going to be looking at a significant expansion of that database just for arrestee DNA. And that's what would have to be accounted for by the crime lab and with some additional resourcing in that direction. I also know for a fact that other states have encountered that problem when they've started this if they hadn't planned for it properly. But again, I think now's the time for us to look at all of these templates that exist out there and make sure we get it right, make sure we do it right the first time around. But I think that those templates do exist, and the lessons learned from past experience would would inform this process as well.
Can you gentlemen explain just that point you were making, John, just to clarify that, the types of cases this would apply to? Let's say you pick somebody up. Initially, you may think it's felony battery, but they negotiate with your office, and it now becomes disorderly conduct. Would you expunge the profile in that case, or would that still go into the system?
In all probability, you would. That's correct. I mean, the most common example that I think we miss right now is an individual, for example, picked up on a weapons charge in which there might be multiple people located in the proximity of a firearm. That firearm is then swabbed. It's sent to the crime lab. You may get a profile that's returned, but it doesn't necessarily come back to that person. That's a very time-consuming thing, and we're under demands to generally review and process a case within 48 hours. If the two systems were happening at the exact same time, you'd have the ability then to review the hard facts of the case, and then that would be supplemented by the DNA information fairly quickly. Ideally, getting that review done within 48 to 72 hours as required for us to process the case. That's the other benefit of going to this system right there. Those cases that we decide not to process or to amend a charge down to a misdemeanor, again, there's provisions in other states for certain types of misdemeanors, and it currently exists in Wisconsin for sexual offenders, even misdemeanors, to still be profiled. The same thing would happen for certain, for example, violent misdemeanor offenses. In other words, you might very well want to collect a sample for certain categories of even misdemeanor offenses if that was appropriate. Again, I think of endangering safety by use of a dangerous weapon, an offense like that, or a battery-related offense. There might very well be a legitimate basis to do a DNA sample from that person.
This is your plan. Do you have a thought on that either way on that point?
I want to leave the legal stuff to the legal expert. But as part of the booking process, which is why I use the phrase, DNA is the fingerprint of the 21st century. We have the same situation with fingerprints. Someone may be arrested for a felony. They're booked on that felony charge. They're fingerprinted, photographed, they're assigned a booking number. You've seen the mug shots. And it may be reduced to a misdemeanor. We don't throw the fingerprints out. So, you know, I mean, if they're not charged at all, that's an issue. And there's a process in place for people to have those records expunged. That would apply here. Don't have a problem with that. But because something goes from a felony to a misdemeanor, to think we should throw the DNA sample out is like asking us to throw out the fingerprint and the photograph because the charge went from a felony down to a misdemeanor. And I would have a problem with that.
And what I'd also point out is with respect to the privacy interests, just the science behind it, the portion that is actually used for identification, again, if you look into it, you'll find that that's sometimes referred to as a non-coding portion of it. In other words, it's not the type of information that you're going to look at the current state of science, at any rate, and retrieve a lot of additional private information, like, you know, this person's, you know, disposed to X or Y disease. Really what it is it's sometimes referred to as the junk portion of the DNA that has unique codes that identify that person. And so, again, that addresses some of the privacy, and that's been part of the litigation that's been vetted in the other states.
Also, there's a legal standard here. Someone mentioned someone getting arrested on a whim. You got to have probable cause to make an arrest. It's a legal standard that the district attorneys, upon review, will judge that you have the probable cause to make this arrest. If the district attorney makes the determination you didn't have probable cause to make the arrest, I would expect that process to kick in, where if this person, through the process that's in place, can have that stuff expunged. But the legal standard's probable cause, and that is probably why the United States Supreme Court shows, you know, some deference to collecting identification on people, certain identification upon an arrest.
If I could just add one additional thing, and that is that for all the cases that have involved exoneration through DNA, you compare that to sort of the daily flow of individuals who are arrested and processed. Anybody in law enforcement can tell you that people give false names, they use false ID all the time, and the biggest tragedy that happens probably hundreds of times a year is somebody is wrongfully arrested simply based on information that we have in the system. In their name, only in their name. And it's not until they come into our system and that we get a chance to look at their fingerprint and the pictures and the past arrests. And sometimes that means that they spend a day or two in jail before we figure out that this is not the person that committed that offense. I think, again, if you have a unique profile like DNA that would attach to offenders that would be inclined not to give the right name, that would speed that process up as well. And I think that you'd actually have fewer people detained wrongfully because somebody used a false name or something like that.
How much does it cost to process one DNA sample?
I don't know the answer to that. I do know that there's a system in place right now that the state does reimburse when you take the sample, but I don't know what they reimburse or what the cost is or how that's been measured lately.
When you talk about the cost, I don't want to be the one that looks at the Walter Ellis situation and look people in the face, the public, the victims of those crimes, and say, well, we didn't think it was worth it. We didn't think or we didn't have the money. That's for the legislature to sort out where the funding is going to come from there, the funding source. But I don't believe that we can afford not to do this. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think if you're going to arrest me, you would have to double the data it was, and come back here.